All right. I am Ben Burgess. This is Give Them an Argument, and I am joined by my good friend and comrade, David Griscom. How you doing, David?
Pretty damn good, friend.
Yeah. Yeah. No, we were just talking before the stream started, and, you know, and I said I was up because I, you know, actually had like plans last night. You know, I had like a friend over and watched a movie, but after they left, I was up until literally 3:30 in the morning, writing my obituary of Kissinger for the Daily Beast. Henry Kissinger was one of the 20th century's greatest monsters. Because when that text came through last night, it's like, hey, can you do something to Kissinger? But it would have to be like right away. I mean, I've been literally thinking for years about how much I would like to write it, you know, that man's obituary. And so, you know, could not pass up the opportunity now.
Yes, sir. I mean, I said this last night when we were streaming, but I'll say it again, that like, I am going through that kind of period that you have, like when you're a kid and it's your birthday and you're sort of been looking forward to this day, you know, and this is like, I'm, you know, there's been excitement. There's been some disappointment. I don't know what I was sort of expecting the feeling to be. But I'm leaning towards the positive side because this is a guy who we are all better off not having him on the same planet as us.
Yes. Yes. No question whatsoever about that. Graphic designer Andy produced some he actually sort of collated some of what I've done about Kissinger in the last couple of years. There was for The Nation like a year and a half ago, there was Trump might face prison, but Bolton and Kissinger never. There's a bunch of Kissinger stuff in there. There was when the Elizabeth Holmes trial started, I wrote this.
That's such a wild story too. Yeah.
For Jacobin, Elizabeth Holmes swindled Henry Kissinger and we're not complaining. Yes, that she could talk Kissinger. Like also that says something right about like Kissinger's great genius that like this lady could talk him out of. Like, I was like, oh, I have this like magical blood treatment. No, I can't tell you how it works. You want to write me a check and you can get in on this. Yeah.
It's so good. I mean, but it's also like, I mean, this is the thing is that like, if you were to have somebody who just embodies so much that it's evil in the world, certainly we know about his crimes against humanity as, you know, as a government official. But this is also just like a little Wall Street gremlin.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Totally. No, absolutely. That's what I was just talking.
Probably the best to ever do it, honestly. Just yeah. Like a guy who's in like all of the worst rooms in the world. Henry Kissinger's there.
Oh my God. Yeah. I was just talking to Danny Bessner for like a thing we did about it for American Prestige. And I don't remember who he was quoting, but he said something about how this guy was like the Zelig of like war crimes. Like he's like, oh, you know, always in the background somewhere. But yeah, no, I mean, this is like, and he also said, yeah, like along the lines of the Wall Street gremlin thing, that's like, this is like this, like maybe the most interesting thing about Kissinger from his perspective is Kissinger and Associates, that like he parlayed, you know, this experience where for years he was like under Nixon and then probably more so under Ford, you know, cause you know, Ford had less like force of personality than Nixon did. You know, Kissinger was essentially the co-president for global affairs and, that like, instead of just like quietly, you know, sitting somewhere and going to parties and writing his memoirs and leaving it at that. Right. It's like, no, I can just probably listen to being rich.
Yeah, exactly. A pretty good indictment of like the DC to, Wall Street pipeline too.
Yeah. 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 Exactly. Also did this and in May on his 100th birthday, Henry Kissinger is a disgusting war criminal. The Rock goes deeper than him. So there's been some Kissinger stuff over the years, but like I wanted to, obviously it felt like the way to put a bow on it would be like with the actual Kissinger's dead article. So
I'm happy you got to write it, friend.
Yeah.
And it's a great piece too, by the way. Obviously everyone knows Ben's pieces are always great, but this is I love the opening here. That you put together of final resting places of great historic figures are sometimes adorned with quotations from the deceased. And I think the one you picked for Kissinger was very apt.
Yeah. Yes. Well, I made two suggestions. The first one was, anything that flies on anything that moves, which was his instructions to his deputy Alexander Haig for, the illegal secret bombing of Cambodia, when Nixon extended the war there. And then the other one is, to really get some of his, you know, his insight about, you know, diplomacy and great power politics, for which he was so celebrated. I don't see why Chile should be allowed to go communist, simply because its people are irresponsible.
Yeah.
That is a special guy. All right. Well, let's get right to it. You know, we're going to do, so this could be short and sweet. I'm going to go pretty much straight from here to, I'm going on,
Are you going in studio?
No. The studio's in New York, so I'm gonna be zooming in from here. But yeah, I'm gonna go on News Nation you know, it's like cable news, so it's like a 10-minute segment. But I'm gonna go on there to argue with this guy from the American Conservative about Kissinger's legacy. So they found somebody to defend him. That's, you know, yeah, say with that what you want, but in any case, but you know, so we're gonna watch this, and you know, this is gonna be a very short breakdown, no post game or anything. It's like half an hour, and then we're gonna do a toast to certainly not to his memory, but to his death. and then call it a day. So yeah, this was this morning on Breaking Points, Crystal Ball, who of course is an actual non-ironic friend of the show, has been on this show a few times, was on TMBS several times before that, and she, I believe, is taking the Kissinger was very bad position, debating her Breaking Points co-host, Sagar and Jetty, who I think is going to represent, like, probably, this is a very low bar, but I think like the sort of best defense anybody in 2023 can kind of scrounge up for him. I mean, it's like, obviously a certain kind of establishment creature is just going to like, they don't even see anything to defend. It's like, oh, this was just this like great statesman. All right. But people who kind of are aware a little bit of his globe spanning history of crimes against humanity, what, you know, the sort of defense that they're going to try to come up with, from what I've seen from like what he said on Twitter, it looks like what Sagar is going to argue here is that, like, well, look, you know, you don't like the neocons. This is like the sort of like realist alternative that's better somehow. And you know, I don't think much of that defense, frankly, but you know, this is, it's going to be interesting to watch this play out. All right.
Big breaking news. Put this up on the screen from The Intercept. There were many ways of leading these obits for Henry Kissinger. The Intercept goes with top U.S. diplomat responsible for millions of deaths dies at 100. Let me read you a little bit of this. They say few people have had a hand in as much death and destruction, as much human suffering in so many places around the world as Henry Kissinger. This was written by journalist Nick Turse, who we actually had on the show, I believe in the past year, was Emily and I were on. He had uncovered new deaths attributable to Kissinger, even, you know, in the past couple of years, mm-hmm. in Cambodia. He goes on to write, Henry Kissinger, National Security Advisor, Secretary of State under two presidents, and longtime eminence grise of the U.S. foreign policy establishment, died on November 29th at his home in Connecticut, 100 years old. He helped to prolong the Vietnam War, expand that conflict into neutral Cambodia, facilitated genocides in Cambodia, East Timor, and Bangladesh, accelerated civil wars in Southern Africa, and supported coups and death squads throughout Latin America. He had the blood of at least 3 million people on his hands, according to his biographer, Greg Grandin. Goes on to quote, there were few people who have had as much a hand in death and destruction, as much human suffering in so many places around the world as Henry Kissinger, according to veteran war crimes prosecutor Reed Brody. So 100 years, lived a long time, advised literally every president.
Of the last 12,
and
I believe.
Hopeful presidents, yeah. Like Hillary Clinton. was a symbol of, you know, both the sort of arrogance and casual disregard for human life, using the entire world as a chessboard and human beings as pawns and playthings on that chessboard. The sort of arrogance that precipitated the war on terror and our misadventures, neocon misadventures in Iraq and Afghanistan. And he is at long last dead.
Well, I'll give my hottest take is I don't think Kissinger was uniquely bad in any respect. If anything, I think he was actually much better than many of the people who occupied top charges in American foreign policy. On Vietnam, I've never understood, and I was telling you this earlier, why people like McGeorge Bundy and Robert McNamara were not nearly as reviled as Kissinger. I mean, Kissinger, sure, you know, he expanded the secret bombing in Cambodia, but him and Nixon signed the Treaty of Paris and they got us the hell out of Vietnam. They had the Vietnamization process. Détente was one of the most successful foreign policy things that we needed at the time. The SALT I Treaty froze the insane missile spending that the LBJ and Kennedy Johnson administration were doing. The opening of China remains one of the great masterclasses in American foreign policy. And my big meta kind of take on why I get annoyed with some of the criticism of Kissinger is the reason why the left hates Kissinger are the reasons that the neocons hated him too, because he refused to incorporate quote unquote morality into his foreign policy. Now, I know that sounds bad, but you know, one of the reasons why I've been so against like moralistic campaigns around Israel, around Ukraine, is that weaponized empathy is a bad way to conduct relations between states. Kissinger disregarded that along with Nixon and pursued in most cases a pretty realist policy and was confined by some difficult political circumstances at the time. So I think people like Rumsfeld, who, by the way, is the person who eventually defeated Kissinger in bureaucratic combat, people like McGeorge Bundy, people like McNamara, many of the CIA director's name for Ronald Reagan and all of them, they're far worse in terms of...
George H.W. Bush.
But he was the president. And that actually brings me back to... Kissinger was not the decider. It was Nixon. It was Ford. It was Kennedy. Right. It was...
Kissinger was incredibly influential.
Yes, he was.
Over a long period of time.
Sure.
Kissinger was literally picking out places on the map to bomb.
So indiscriminately was LBJ.
Bomb.
Yeah.
And so you and I have a fundamental difference of opinion, a philosophical difference in terms of conduct and morality. And, you know, I'm opposed to genocide. I'm opposed to war crimes. This man was a war criminal. There's no two ways about it. Read Christopher Hitchens' book on it if you want to know all the details. But I mean, even just with regard to Vietnam, he intentionally blew up peace talks in an attempt to try to get Nixon into the White House. Mm-hmm. Then he's rewarded with the National Security Advisor's job. So even if you're just talking about Vietnam, he prolongs this conflict for years and expands it into Cambodia and Laos. The U.S. dropped 540,000 bombs on those places. They slaughtered 150 to 500,000 Cambodian civilians. So, you know, I can't really just look past that. And the other piece I would say, even if you don't care about genocide, you know, the backing Pinochet in Chile, these brutal military dictatorships, even if you're like, yeah, I don't really care if it serves American interests. The other piece of it and why it is so consistent and why he's like the grandfather of neocons is because there's such a level of arrogance, thinking that we can just move these pieces on the chessboard around, not care about any of the humanity involved, and not experience any sort of fallout or blowback from those sort of adventurers. So he did support the war in Iraq. Look, it's not like he was opposed to it, because this is completely consistent with his ideology. Now, the neocons may have tried to wrap their ideology in idealism.
Trying not to stop this too many times just to make sure that we're relaxed on time here. But I got to love that out of everything that was just rattled off, the first one to get a grudging, he made a lot of mistakes, was the invasion of Iraq, which is like, certainly the invasion of Iraq is like one of the most evil things any major nation state has done in decades and decades, right? No doubt about it. But like, you know, she also just mentioned Chile and Cambodia, you know, like these things are not chump change.
Well, I mean, this is like, I'm sorry, Sagar's piece here, like, I think that's juxtaposition, this like false tension between realism and quote unquote weaponized morality, right? Mm-hmm. First of all, already when you're using a term weaponized, you're like front loading what we mean by morality here. But because when you use a term like realism, it's just like, oh, well, that's just like the, you know, looking at the facts and making decisions based on them, particularly in the case of Cambodia. What was like the realest case here, right? Like even from the most cynical bastard kind of position, right? The strategic objectives of Kissinger and Nixon's extension of the war they had massive consequences. But in terms of like providing more power for the United States or the official strategic goals of the United States being in that conflict in the first place, we didn't achieve those, right? So sitting here being like, oh, well, realism, you know, we might not like it because sometimes it's a little dirty, right? I don't find that to be a very compelling argument when you actually look at the facts of the matter here. Even if you are just like a psychopath, like American power over everything else person, it didn't achieve its stated goals. So I don't know if you can actually make that case in that particular example, especially of saying, oh, well, a weaponized morality is bad, but realism is good because it does these things. It very clearly didn't when it comes to Cambodia.
Right. Clearly. Right. I mean, this is the destruction of Cambodia. I mean, not only, I mean, the stream we did last night, we were watching the TNBS clip of, you know, the second level of the Russian doll nesting of the clips. There was Christopher Hitchens talking about this, and you know, Hitchens points out, or I don't know, this might have actually been Danny in the TNBS segment afterwards, together, but like somebody pointed out, like, look, the bombing of Cambodia, I mean, as well as being morally monstrous, was also just based on a bad theory of of like what was you know, like, oh, well, we could like defeat the Viet Cong if only like they weren't getting this like support, you know, from like, or like, you know, had some like sort of base of operations in Cambodia. That was just like, that was like itself a crackpot wishful thinking view about the Vietnam War, even in sort of coldly amoral terms. And yeah, I mean, like, how did that go? Right. We got the Khmer Rouge, you know, that's, like that just, so yeah, I mean, like there's certainly no realist defense of this. And yeah, I mean, this, sort of general idea that, you know, about weaponized empathy, like, I think it's like, okay, so if like neocons will sort of selectively appeal to moral sentiments, you know, Saddam Hussein is an evil dictator or whatever to in order to whip up support for war. And then, you know, you're sort of just coldly lizard like Kissinger people will say like, oh, I don't care about any of that. Right. Like, okay. Oh, those are like, this is a very, narrow debate, right? This is not like, these are not the only options. Like this is a wildly false dichotomy that, you know, you can, in fact, you can care about, you know, like you can have a sense of humanity, you know, you can care about the, horrific human consequences of things the United States does. And that's why you're opposed to what the neocons are doing. That's also why you're opposed to what somebody like Kissinger was doing, which, you know, definitely had significant overlap with what, the neocons supported. And even if there were, you know, areas of disagreement like detente, you know, with the Soviet Union and all that, but like it's still like to my mind, the relationship between empathy and realism is not like, oh, realism is like where you turn off your empathy. Like it's that in the relationship between these things, is that, you know, the like having this realist understanding that these wars won't achieve the goals that they're supposed to is important, you know, like is an important part of criticizing those wars, but it's not like that's the only objection to them. There are lots of things that won't accomplish anything that I don't care that much about, right? I mean, recycle the line from the thing I wrote for Responsible Statecraft, right? If like anti-war protesters try to levitate the Pentagon by the power of meditation, that's not going to work either, but I'm not going to get hot and bothered about them spending the afternoon taking a shot at it, right? Like, I don't care, right? It's that the problem with the wars is that they're not going to work at achieving their stated goals, and also they're going to leave this trail of dead and broken human beings.
Well, the thing is, like, realism is a classic kind of like weasel word. And what I mean by this, like, yes, there is like a international relations theory of realism, but the way it's used in like pop discourse, right? In popular discourse is just a way of, because like, what is the weaponized empathy, for example, in the case of Chile, the weaponized irrational empathy of saying that, hey, I think that millions of people in Chile shouldn't be subjected to a brutal dictatorship, that people should, human beings shouldn't be thrown from helicopters into the sea, for the crazy irrational belief that one person, one vote, that people should be able to choose their leaders, not have them dictated by American and mineral capital upon them, right? So when you're talking about realism here, the realism is just the way to sort of say, like, is to get around the fact that, no, you are a partisan. You are an extreme partisan of a very particular thing. And in all these cases, they're explicitly anti-democratic, anti-people, and anti-human life. I mean, you've been seeing this in some of the early statements we've gotten from Kirby and people in the Biden administration about Kissinger's, like, well, you know, he might disagree with him sometimes, but he was a scholar and a realist. It's like, no, this guy was an extreme partisan for the political and economic interest of a select few, and embarked on a campaign in a life of providing cover for and actively participating in some of the worst crimes against humanity. Again, not out of some realist, just looking at the cold hard facts calculation, but actually sitting here and saying, like, how can we use the might of the United States security forces? How can we use the might of the United States empire in order to secure certain outcomes for certain people that I like? And I would have more respect if people just came out and straight up said that, like, hey, yeah, I don't think, you know, I agree with Kissinger when he said that the Chileans shouldn't be able to elect their own leaders. Right.
Exactly. All right. Let's watch the last part of this.
But the reality is that they were very much consistently trying to pursue their own version of Kissinger's strategy, which is, again, why, in spite of all of his various record of criminality over many decades, he still was feted by elites from both parties consistently. And, you know, we're talking a lot about the loss of U.S. credibility and how can they ever say anything with a straight face about care of democracy, human rights, et cetera, given the support of Netanyahu's, you know, indiscriminate bombing in Gaza right now. You know, Kissinger really is like the grandfather of that, too. We can point to the Iraq War and the loss of U.S. credibility, but it really goes back to him and the total disregard for law, constitutionality, and any sort of care and concern for human rights.
I understand. I just don't think human rights or morality or any of these things really have anything to play whenever it comes to how you should conduct yourself. Because ultimately, you find yourselves like the Biden administration and all the governments before them backing places like Saudi Arabia and then talking about other things in Ukraine. It's like it's never going to be consistent. Whenever you live in a messy world, it's going to be messy. So you might as well disregard the pretense. I remember, I think he was caught on one of the Nixon tapes basically saying exactly this. I would just say again, I don't think he's uniquely bad in that period of American history.
Listen, I could buy that there. I think part of why he stands out for people as such a uniquely evil figure is because he is this sort of symbol of the banality of evil that was embraced by presidents of both parties over such a long period of time.
Maybe.
And so, yeah, to say like, oh, well, other American like foreign policy advisors did bad things is like, obviously,
yeah,
that's
to me,
true.
Way worse.
Like I don't know how you get worse than being responsible for like millions of people's deaths and backing genocides in various places and military coups, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, but that's my point is that by this regard, I mean, FDR heavily supported Joseph Stalin. He bailed him out in many respects, and Stalin was responsible for in many cases more deaths than Hitler.
Against the Nazis.
That's my point is that you live in a messy world. It's like sometimes we have to make choices about who we support and who we work with. And at the end of the day, and also on 68, it's not 100% confirmed that they blew up those peace talks. Mm. Although it is controversial. I actually would still love if anybody who's alive, who was president at that time, we're still looking for total confirmation. I think detente was a great policy. I think SALT I was what this country needed at the time. He bought us a long time before Afghanistan, the eventual rollback people who came under Reagan. I mean, he, within the political confines at the time, pursued Vietnamization, signed the Treaty of Paris. He got our POWs out part of the negotiation with the eventual Viet Cong. Under him in Ford, they did not, you know, strike back against the fall of Saigon, which was the correct and unpopular policy at the time. So there were a lot of things that they did, which I support, and I think were on balance really good for America. Now, did he have a lot of mistakes and did he make a lot of dumb calls like supporting the war in Iraq? Yes. He also opposed NATO expansion, spoke out for not interfering in Ukraine. He believed very strongly, as I do, in the spheres of influence ideology. So I don't think he is nearly as bad as many of the people who were dominant foreign policy figures at the time. And I think most of the reason people hate him is because of the resurgence. He became the icon of the devil during the new left, which is what most of the modern left is like a descendant of.
Well,
because of the expansion of the bombing.
It's that,
of
but
Cambodia.
Then it's also the longstanding influence. I mean, slaughter in Laos, slaughter in Cambodia, slaughter in Vietnam, slaughter in East Timor, backing Suharto. That caused the death, 200,000 deaths just right there. We were their number one supplier of weapons. Backing the coup of Allende and, you know, putting in place Pinochet and the, you know, brutal deaths that resulted in. So I can't just look at that and be like, yeah, but, you know, China, like, oopsie, genocide, what can you do?
But that's anyway. My only point is, how many civilians did LBJ, McNamara, and McGeorge Bundy kill in
Vietnam?
I'm trying to say
there was lots of other evil done by other presidents and other national security advisors. But in any case, not going to mourn this man's death after 100 long years of causing death and destruction.
I will give a book recommendation. People should read it. We'll put the book jacket up there on the screen. It's his early years, which is very instructive, not about Kissinger. Great biographies are about the people, their times, and what the foreign policy conversation looked like. It's by Niall Ferguson, or maybe it's Neil. I never know how to say his name. I recommend that people read it. Do not read the Walter Isaacson biography because it's a joke. I believe the only other credible one, if you want from a lefty perspective, is the one that you mentioned there.
The Trial of Henry Kissinger.
Well, that's the Christopher Hitchens book. But there's the one that the Yale historian wrote that you quoted him. I forget what it's called. That you just read in the Intercept biography. That one also, if you want to hear more of a critical perspective, you should also.
You could also hear from Anthony Bourdain in his book, who said, and I quote, "You'll never stop wanting to beat Henry Kissinger to death with your bare hands after visiting Cambodia." So there you go.
Bourdain, as usual, had some good takes. He also was a cringe boomer leftist at his worst. So I'll leave it at that too. How about that?
Hey guys.
This whataboutism about LBJ and McNamara, like, this does
kind of seem... That's been a funny one.
Like, yeah, he brings that up several times, and that's not just him. I've been seeing other people do that, like, in, like, some of the online...
One of the Manhattan Institute guys was doing that on Twitter.
Yeah. It's, like, it's so weird, because it's, like, well, who are you even directed this at? Like, it's, like, you think Crystal loves LBJ? I mean, it's, like, with... Why, right? Like,
well, I mean, it's so wild because, like, when it comes to LBJ, I mean, like, that is such a defining aspect of his legacy. I'll get in trouble for this, but, like, I'll even go out on a limb. You know, it almost becomes a problem for sort of, like, actually looking at, you know, some of the domestic policies of LBJ on the left, because it's just like we have to start from the place of, like, how horrendous. I mean, LBJ put his nuts on the table and said, "This is why we're in Vietnam." I mean, just an absolute monster. Of a character. And I'm just saying, like, the hatred of LBJ is just so extreme that even if I were to do a segment on, like, looking at some of the domestic policies or things that he did, I would have to front load it with, like, 4 minutes of condemnation before I could even get into, you know, looking into LBJ as a historical figure in the American. And so anyways, like, the idea that, like, oh, well, this holy cow of the left, right? This Brahmin of the left.
Yeah, LBJ, right. Like,
which is so insane to me.
I mean, like, he's talking about, like, hatred of Kissinger coming out of the Vietnam era New Left. It's like, well, what did the Vietnam era New Left think about LBJ? Come on. Like, you know,
the idea is like, oh, well, people back in the day, the left back in the day when these people were major figures hated Kissinger. And then the left, who are members of the same kind of political orientation as those people, also hate Kissinger. You know, oh, look, I have a line from all these people who hold this position in the 60s and 70s. The same people hold that position in the 2020s. Yeah. I don't understand that as, like, I mean, you know, other than maybe giving some help for people who are confused about that. I don't understand that being much of a point. I will say,
like, I think even honestly, like, okay, you know, clearly the Vietnam era New Left hated LBJ's guts and McNamara. And, like, you know, McNamara at least had the gay grace to, like, be tortured about it, like, later in life. Not enough, right? But he was. And And, you know, LBJ, I mean, if he lived to the 2000s, I mean, it's like, you know, it's like every time he was on TV, like people like us would be like, oh my God, this man is like a genocidal war criminal. Why is he on TV? The same way we were with Kissinger, but also even the more forgiving liberal view of LBJ, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, like, and this is like, even people who are like pretty mainstream, right? Like, it's always presented as a mixed bag. It's always presented as he's like this tragic Shakespearean figure, because like civil rights and, you know, Social Security, but also, my God, Vietnam, right? Like that, like nobody's, you know, like nobody anywhere really in 2023 is like, oh yeah, no, that was fine.
Mm-hmm. No, 100%. And I would, and Crystal does a great job in that exchange. It's typical. I would highlight versus the banality of evil, what she was sort of getting at with the continuity of somebody mm-hmm. Like Kissinger, why he is such a reviled figure, is that like he really embodies, you know, to use the kind of pop term, the blob mentality, right? Mm-hmm. He really does, like from Republican to Democrat, the commitment to American empire maintains itself regardless of how radical or distinct we might see the political swings between presidents. The fact that Kissinger is the guy who is revered and brought into the White House administration after administration, I think shows, you know, a kind of general consensus and the orientation of American presidents and American power. Taxes, you know, we don't always agree on how much we want to tax the rich, right? Should corporations be taxed at 30% or at 22%? Right, that's American politics for you. But you know where there is a lot of consensus is like, hey, if any people around the rest of the world want to start challenging the power of the rich and capital, we got to bomb the hell out of them. Or yes. If not that, we need to make sure that a general can get mm-hmm. into a place of power, because we can't deal with that.
Totally. And yeah, I mean, above all, you know, I think that's what Kissinger was a symbol of, that continuity. I really like that you highlighted that from the debate. And, you know, for various reasons, he was a sort of an unusually open mm-hmm. advocate of this stuff. I mean, like, some of that's just the bad luck to have had all of the Nixon tapes come out because of Watergate. You know, some of it is also just that, like, you know, he had all, like, I don't know, he thought that it was like clever and witty to like sort of make, you know, references to this stuff over the decades. So yeah, I mean, I think he really sort of became this symbol of this stuff, and the you know, that which he is a symbol of, obviously, like the headline of the article I wrote for Jacobin on his birthday in May. You know, the rot goes much deeper, no doubt about that, right? But yeah, I mean, I think it makes perfect sense to me that this guy who literally, you know, was a accomplice to genocide in East Timor, who conspired to remove the elected government of a democratic country in South America that you know, America was not in any way, shape, or form at war with, who oversaw some truly depraved crimes against humanity in Cambodia. It's like, yeah, it makes sense. It makes sense that guy would be this hated. It would be strange, frankly, if he weren't. And I don't know. I'm glad he's dead.
I'll just really quick, I will just add that, like, you know, this is a guy who would go on TV for years. And you know, not only do we have that kind of political consensus, but this media consensus about, oh, you know, the wise old statesman.
Yeah.
From a media class. Like, I'm sorry, just look at the difference between the way Henry Kissinger was handled whenever he was interviewed or talked to, and the way that if ever they bring on somebody who doesn't think that millions of Palestinians should be slaughtered wholesale mm-hmm. in their homes. Are treated, right? If you are somebody who doesn't think that Israel should just be able to bomb carte blanche all of Gaza, what do you have to do? You have to spend 7 minutes of your 8 minute segment talking about how bad you think Hamas is, right? And the fact that Kissinger just got to come on and be like, oh, well, wise statesman, please tell us your thoughts on the world and help us figure a way out of this, and never really got seriously challenged on any of these kind of things, just shows how complicit a lot of the major American media figures from today to, you know, back in the day have been in this. And, you know, Hitchens, you know, the Hitchens book is great. And I'm not even trying to take anything away from him on that. It's like, the fact is that Hitchens is notable on this is because he was a kind of character who would, you know, take those kind of positions.
Totally.
You know, it got him into a little bit of trouble or whatnot. While so many other people in the American media just, you know, very much take their marching orders and follow through on them. And it's, I don't know, it's explicitly clear if you compare the way that Kissinger was treated in the American media versus anyone who says we shouldn't be killing civilians is.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I can't improve on that. So it's some nice Irish whiskey here.
Sure. You know, I think wine, blood, for me, that's where I'm going. So cheers.
Makes sense to me. Cheers.
Cheers, Ben. Cheers, everyone out there. It's a good day.
All right. Watch David on Left Reckoning. And we are going to be back on Monday with Slavoj Žižek for our season closer. So really looking forward to that. Left is best.